You're listening to Brumpod, the podcast for small businesses by small businesses, discussing the topics that matter to you, including marketing, networking, generating business awareness, as well as covering various business tools and technology. Brought to you by Brummies Networking, the home of free, stripped-back business networking. Produced by Audio Shed Podcast Studio. Welcome to episode 62 of Brumpod. I'm Richard Heathcote, and I am here with Jason and Ewan.
Hello.
Hello.
And first, a slight apology for the fact that we have been away for quite a while. Unavoidable, unfortunately, due to a rather manic workload. It just hasn't ended up working for quite a while. But we are back, and we shall be back regularly from now on, we promise. Whether you like it or not.
Well, actually, what happened was Elon Musk wanted to buy Brumpod, and we've been in negotiations, and we couldn't broadcast until it was concluded. But the short answer is, he's not buying it. He decided to buy something else.
Yeah, I don't know why, but we thought we were a good sale. Well, if you wanted to, why buy Twitter? Well, you could have just joined in on Brummies Biz Hour like everybody else, but there we are.
We even threw in biscuits.
Yeah, hobnobs as well. Chocolate
ones, yeah.
Yeah. What a waste of a hobnob that was.
Well, exactly. Many a time that's been said. And so the topic in hand, of course, because it's so topical, is the fact that Elon Musk has bought Twitter, or is currently in the stages of finalising his purchase of Twitter. And our subject really is, how does this relate to our own networks? And will it make a difference in the slightest who owns it? So yes, he's in the process of finalising it for a cool $44 billion. Not exactly pocket change down the back of the sofa. Jack Dorsey, the co-founder of Twitter, has called the takeover the singular solution he trusts. So make of that what you will. So since the announcement, several key figures, those who are verified and, you know, well-known for various reasons, have seen their accounts drop follow accounts, often to the tune of hundreds of thousands of people in some instances. And Twitter claims this is organic and not automated, sort of bot deletion or anything. So clearly some people are deactivating their accounts in protest, really, I assume. Some people are a little wary about this sale to Elon Musk, as he is a proponent of free speech, which in and of itself is a good idea. But could that mean reinstating previously banned people, the likes of Trump, for one? So, Ewan, for the first instance, what do you make of this latest news?
Probably there are some people who've got more money than sense, to be honest, but there we are.
Well, yeah.
I'm just trying to work out what difference is going to make as to which particular billionaire owns Twitter. But it's certainly a little bit different that someone with, shall we say, slightly less politically correct or slightly more free speech leaning is actually in charge rather than the usual suspects. I don't see, speaking personally, that it's going to make an awful lot of difference to Twitter generally or the way that I use it.
Yeah. Jason?
You use Twitter, Ewan.
Yeah, it may surprise you. I mean, I've moved on from the wax tablets and the slaves running to deliver them, but...
He has his own personal pigeon that he attaches his tweets to and throws it out the window to Twitter HQ for them to post on his behalf.
Well, they use a bird logo, don't they?
Exactly. You're just using it old school.
Yeah, and I think with the new AI that they're introducing, the translations from Latin will go very well. Look, honestly, it's interesting to see what's happened, because these platforms do change. They do evolve. You know, LinkedIn, when we first started using it, was a job site. Twitter is capitalizing on the PR of it. Elon Musk is a hugely well-known controversial figure, or he likes controversy more than he is controversial. Some people will delete their accounts in protest and then reactivate them quietly at a later date. Some people will make their way to a new platform and realize that it's actually worse than Twitter, and then come back. It's more interesting to see what's happening as things are settling down now. You know, it's interesting that people that are, shall we say, loved by Twitter, like Mark Hamill, have lost thousands of followers. People that are not necessarily liked in the same way on Twitter, like Nigel Farage, are complaining that they've not been able to gain any followers. They've plateaued and now it's sort of stagnated for them. You know, it doesn't seem to, they don't seem to have their tweets engaging anymore. You know, they're complaining that they're becoming irrelevant. But, you know, then again, I remember when Bucks Fizz dominated the charts. They can't complain that their singles just aren't listened to anymore. You know, people just move on. Nigel Farage being compared to Bucks Fizz. Who thought that would ever happen on a Brumpod? But yeah, I think maybe it's a wake-up call for how people are using Twitter, what Twitter actually wants to do, whether there's anything better out there. I mean, how do you use Twitter compared to, say, LinkedIn or Facebook or TikTok or Instagram or...
What?
Don't confuse the man.
No, I mean, I don't use Twitter personally. I use it for business. I'm very careful to keep out of political controversy because I use it for business. So, you know, I don't want to take sides on something which, you know, is not central to me. Which is going to alienate other people. Yeah, absolutely. Now, you know, if I was a staunch supporter of a political party, that might be different. But, you know, just the guy in the street in that sense. Don't do it.
I'm fortunate that I dislike pretty much all politicians and political parties. So I just tend to have a go at the incumbents on Facebook because it's funny. But like you, I think I keep my LinkedIn very professional and I just tend to stay out of Twitter because what I tend to notice is the arguments are very polarized. They're binary. There's no room for nuance. There's not enough characters in a tweet to actually, you know, explain a position pretty well. It goes for the punchline or the burn or the pithy comeback, but facts don't necessarily matter. And the number of anonymous accounts, which are probably bots or at the very least operated with, you know, from a multiple accounts, we all follow in the same agenda. I just don't see it as a way to engage with people, more that it's a way for people to broadcast ideologies where, you know, think LinkedIn is family and friends. I tend to delete anything where people post to a group or a particular page, and LinkedIn is purely about business.
Yeah.
I mean, Twitter can be useful. I've used it for, well, I've had my main Twitter account, which is both business and personal. For over 10 years. I went on Twitter first, not that long after it started, probably about 2 or 3 years after it launched, back when nobody had heard of it. And yes, it has been likened to a cesspool over the years. And it's true to a degree. And certainly Elon Musk has had, as you said, he's certainly posted some controversial stuff to the point where his board of directors have in the past had to approve all of his tweets for fear of it affecting their stock prices and things like that. So what that means now, he's going to be in charge, who knows? But I think, like you said before, our networks, regardless of the platform, it is what we make it. So if you follow toxic people and get involved in toxic conversations and hashtags and threads and things, then that's going to be what your experience is. But if you don't...
How many times have I used the line, the LinkedIn we get, we deserve?
Exactly. Mm. So if you follow all the controversial stuff, then that is what your timeline is going to be filled with. And that is what your opinion of the platform is going to be. But if you don't follow those sort of people, which I don't, because I have absolutely no interest in the the likes of the vitriolic folk like Casey Hopkins and things in the past, because I have absolutely zero interest in what they've got to say, then it means that my Twitter experience is wildly different to a lot of other people.
Yeah, if all you're going to do is look at the cat videos or something, then...
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I just thought, actually, that you know, if you're swimming around in a cesspool, it pays to keep your mouth shut.
On behalf of the team, we are not advocating swimming in cesspools. Do not swim in cesspools.
Yeah, but my journey, like yours with Twitter, I created a Twitter account a few years back, and I watched and I observed, and I've followed some friends who followed back, and I've seen some of the, how can I put it, more extreme posts. And there were times when I've challenged it and simply got people aggressively coming back with their point of view. And then sort of you almost get dismissive. You throw back a jokey punchline and they keep coming back. And then you end up with either they block you or you block them. And then you suddenly realize that these people aren't on here to engage and discuss. They're here to evangelize for their point of view. And if you put across something else that competes with their version of reality, they will simply dismiss your facts and, you know, substitute it with a reality of their own. Mm. And you realize it's not worth engaging with these people. But on Facebook, if you're not a friend or you're not a family member, I don't engage with you. If you post all of those motivational, you know, thought for the day pages, I'll go into the little button on the side and I'll click hide all from, you know, thought for the day page. So, you know, I've got cousins, bless them, that post some really inane stuff.
And they're here today.
Yeah. But you can only challenge it so far and say, why are you posting this? So you block the source. I still see the stuff they post about them and their family and their friends and their life, and I get to like it, but I don't have to look at the random stuff that they endorse. It's the same with LinkedIn. I clean up my feed religiously. So whenever anybody posts something from a third degree connection that is a link to what they think about a news article, I don't care if it's had 20,000 likes. It's irrelevant to me. I'll go into the tab and I'll point out I'm not interested in this topic or this author. They're gone from my feed. All I see is the people that matter to me and what they're doing and how I can help them. And yeah, I've gardened both of those feeds pretty well. With Twitter, it's not worth it. I just withdrew. I observe. I rarely engage. I think I use it mostly for supporting the people that come on the Brummies Biz Hour.
Yeah.
That's about it.
And the point is, there are very rarely any winners in Twitter spats. Or any, well, yeah, you know, on regardless of platform, there are very rarely any winners. And more often than not, it is just better to, as you say, disengage. Don't even attempt to put your point of view across, even though you may know you're completely in the right. Because, yeah, then they're not going to accept it. Because people, especially people, those that are hiding behind, you know, fake profiles and anonymous accounts and that kind of thing, they don't care. Yeah. So there's no point. You can have, if you've got a good group of friends, you can have a good lively debate about various topics. But at the end of the day, you are having a discussion or a debate. You're not attacking the person. Whereas on online networking or social networking, it ends up becoming personal. It ends up becoming a celebrity death match. And there's no winners. And then it becomes, then you'll get the other people that will be even more anonymous and then start going to further extremes. Like when you get people that have had their lives doxed online just because they disagree with their viewpoints and that kind of thing. So that there are no winners. And for that, yeah, it's pointless engaging in that kind of thing. And it's better just to maintain your network. to make it what you want it to be.
I mean, some of the Twitter spats are like two perfect strangers yelling at each other in the street, and then one of them following the other home and finding out where they live.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy. I still, ever since I read about the Dunning-Kruger effect, I still see it in action, particularly on Twitter. And, you know, the big takeaway is stupid people think they're smart, and smart people know that they don't know everything. So the problem you have is that when smart people have a debate on social media, they're willing to concede points and accept the other person's point of view to a degree. You're never 100% correct on anything that's an opinion. There's always room to find that middle ground. That's how great negotiators work. You find what you agree on rather than what you disagree on. But stupid people are convinced they're 100% right, and their mission is not to learn anything from you, but to make you concede that they're right. So they won't give ground. They won't meet you in the middle. They certainly won't focus on what you might agree on rather than, you know, keep arguing about what you disagree on. So, yeah, to me, that just means that a lot of these Twitter discussions are 140 characters from people that haven't got enough intelligence to put a well-reasoned, longer debate together. That's probably why I tend not to use Twitter a lot.
Yeah. So, Elon, I hope we've helped. if you're listening, then you know, give us a call if you want any more ideas.
And we'll send you the bill for the consultancy.
100%. Yeah. You can afford it.
Do you think they'll go up to 280 characters and have longer discussions? Will there be
It already is 280 characters.
You've been off it too long, Jason.
That happened about 8 years ago.
See, that's the last time I typed anything above 140. It's just not worth it. It's like, retweet, that's it. And that's it, only if it's got the Brummies Biz Hour hashtag in it. But, yeah, will they have longer discussions like Facebook? But then again, look at Facebook and LinkedIn, where some posts go on for so long Peter Jackson could make a movie of it. And you lose interest. You know, we've got short attention spans these days with the MTV generation. Well, most of us.
thank you, Jason.
That wasn't aimed at you. That was Richard. He doesn't know what music is. He just spends all his time in a sound booth. He just likes voice, not music. That gets in the way. But we've got short attention spans. And I always tell people...
And we've got short attention spans as well. And sorry, had to be done.
Yeah, so... Did I tell you my joke about short attention spans? I don't care. Let's go ride bikes.
Pigeon. Yeah.
So, yeah, the future of Twitter, will they try and change it? Will they try and keep the formula? This whole thing about free speech, I don't think it's going to help free speech by getting some of these, you know, how can I put them? Banned people back. Free speech is not having a debate off limits. However, free speech is not being able to shout, oh my God, there's a bomb when you're on an aeroplane. Just because it's funny. You know, there are limits. There's always going to be limits. We just don't all agree on what they are.
Yes, my thinking is anyone that has been previously banned shouldn't automatically be coming back, because there are plenty of safeguards at Twitter to either, you know, temporarily suspend accounts for a short period of time. It's only when you get the serial offenders that get banned for life, like we've seen in the recent couple of years. There have to be consequences for someone that breaks rules. And like Twitter, every online platform, it's going to have terms of use. Like, we all click them. We never read them, but we all click them. And if you go against it, then there should be consequences that you shouldn't be allowed to use the platform again. After all, it is free. Yes, we are all a product, as we've said in other episodes, but at the end of the day, it's a free platform. Everyone's free to use it. but within the parameters of don't be an idiot. I was about to use a different word then, but I suddenly remember, no, don't.
But I think the problem is that some of the rules are a bit opaque.
Yes.
Yeah. And there is a view that sometimes they're applied selectively, depending on whether the people at Twitter who are pressing the button actually agree with the person's politics.
Yeah.
That's like
legal terms. That is a danger.
Yeah. Laws, rules, loopholes, applied selectively. The three of us, if we were to give a definition of what free speech actually is, would probably randomly differ. And I think if we were given a specific case where we had to decide, was that an abuse of free speech or was that using free speech to the letter rather than the spirit of the law, we might all come up with some very different opinions on it. And that's the problem. You're trying to create a blanket rule without having the thing, hey, that's not what we intended it for. Or you're not supposed to be able to use it in that way. Once you create those rules, they're there. And yeah, free speech does not give people the right to preach hate. But you also have the non-platforming, where people will not entertain a discussion. Now, how do you take down a bad viewpoint if it is simply not, allowed to be dragged out and exposed for what it is, a bad viewpoint? There'll always be the issue, well, we never got to raise that issue or dismiss that issue. So it's always going to be sort of, there'll be people that claim they're disenfranchised because they never got to put their point of view across. It's a very complex, difficult thing. You know, the right to insult someone does not mean you have to insult someone. The right to take offence does not mean that you have to take offence at everything that's been said. A lot of the times you would want an explanation. Or you might, what's the great line? Never attribute to incompetence what might be explained by malice. There's a whole buzz thing about using gender pronouns at the moment. Now, most people, if you misname them using a pronoun, will simply offer up a quick correction and you go, oh, my bad. You correct yourself and you move on. But there's this fear that you're going to get it wrong and be pilloried for it that makes people resent the fact that they have to choose their language more carefully. And that's where you get all these arguments. There's a middle ground. There's a level of agreement where you can go, if you get it wrong and it wasn't a malintent, then no bad. Just, correct yourself and move on. Don't even need to apologise if you don't feel it's, an offence was meant. But you get all these groups just bashing against each other because one group has to be right over the other. Social media is still in its infancy. It still gets tantrums and gets angry and is easily distracted. And we are watching it grow up. Yep. We don't know what it's going to grow up into yet.
I think one thing that could solve a lot of Twitter's problems and social media as a whole is a bit like when we had the whole GDPR thing and we basically created our list from scratch. Or, other people sent things out saying, if you want to still be on our list, do this, click these, and then you're done. I think if they paused everybody's accounts and said, yeah, you can come back, of course you can, still free, all fine, but just do this quick IQ test, will you? It's not complicated. Yeah, you haven't got to be Einstein, but you've got to reach a certain level of proficiency to go beyond this point. That, I think, would weed out quite a few of the people that you wouldn't want there.
I think your problem, Richard, is never underestimate the ability of very intelligent people to hold some totally stupid views.
Well, there is that. Well, we'll just have to create more and more tests.
There are people that would resent to being tested and disengage, and they go off to another platform like Parler or Truth Social. Those giants that are suddenly, clamoring for Twitter's crown.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait, they're not. That's the other problem. What's the alternative? Yeah, we've seen the fall and rise of many of them. MySpace fell by the wayside. Some of them have had a failure to launch. But
well, yeah, there is that. But then it's probably better to have a smaller cesspool that you can ignore rather than have it floating in a swimming pool, for want of a better example. I really could have thought of something much, much nicer than that.
I've just had this vision of you, Richard, tiptoeing round this small cesspool with a peg on your nose.
Yeah.
I think.
But yeah, sorry, Jason, but if we're not using Twitter, as you and I aren't really, you know, very much, are we going to miss it if it went?
No, I've been thinking about this for a while. I, over the years, have become less and less inclined to look at social media. I very rarely now actually scroll through my Twitter timeline, and I will on occasion, but if I'm bored, I won't look at it for that long, because it's just, it can just be so same old, same old. And I wouldn't be remotely unhappy if social media was just turned off and we went back to doing different things. I really wouldn't be that bothered.
See, for me, LinkedIn is for business, and I do very good business out of it. You know, I like
it.
Facebook is for family and friends. That's, for me, off. That's my downtime. That's where I have a bit of a laugh. Twitter is just pure entertainment. I just watch the shouty people hurling abuse at each other and think, don't get involved. I've managed to compartmentalize them. But I think one of Twitter's biggest problems and the biggest change they could make is more accountability for what people post. I wouldn't go as far as saying people say, oh, but anonymous accounts are a problem. Whistleblowers, people that are genuinely afraid of the backlash or the abuse they would get for stating a perfectly, you know, opinion they're perfectly entitled to go through. They may need anonymity, but there's a lot of abusive accounts where there's no photo, there's no name, there's nothing that's traceable. It's basically a keyboard hero who would never say that to your face, but because they've got the privilege, the empowerment of having that barrier between you and them, they can hurl abuse and figure there is absolutely no consequence. There needs to be consequences for people that misuse that privilege.
Yes, over the years, I've found myself looking at LinkedIn far more than most other platforms. You know, I'm on Instagram, but purely for personal. And again, it often comes down to the algorithms that all these things put in place for you, because they keep changing it. They keep forcing stuff that you don't even want to look at on you. So your feed doesn't even become an organic feed of what you want to look at. So I just tend to post stories, and then at least they expire, and then no one cares.
Yeah, but that's nothing new. Look at Google as a search engine. Google is only a good search engine if it brings back true and accurate results, but then it also makes money off advertising. So it brings back some paid-for results as well. And if it doesn't get the balance right, it doesn't sell enough ads. You know, it's either too ad-heavy, and then the results aren't factual or correct, and it loses the trust of its users, or it's incredibly factually accurate and correct, but doesn't give the advertisers what they need. And if you search for florists, what you want is maybe your most local, your cheapest, best value florists. Large chains that sell flowers will want to have their adverts placed above those accurate results, which makes them less accurate. It becomes a paradox, a bit of a balancing act. It's the same with Twitter. If your results are exactly what you want, they can't sell you anything new. So they have to keep introducing new stuff to you and seeing whether you'll accept it or not, and testing you. You said before, the product is free. because it is not the product you are. They're trying out data and plans and algorithms on you all the time.
Yeah.
That won't ever stop.
No, but I'm talking about things like when you look at your feed and you suddenly get something that looks new and it's something that one of your contacts or friends has posted days before that never actually appeared at the time. So, I mean, some of the algorithms can be really weird and screwy that show you stuff at random times and not sort of in the order of, you know, when it was done kind of thing.
When it deems it relevant. I went to the cinema last night and the woman that served us behind the counter when we were getting the drinks and popcorn and stuff is the girlfriend of a daughter of one of our other friends. The next morning, that girl's profile is appearing on my Facebook feed because the algorithms have picked up that we're all connected, we were in the same area at different times, but it puts those links together and says, oh, you might know this person. Well, I do. She's the daughter of a friend of mine. And I can understand why they put that together. But yeah, that's how algorithms work. It's how networking works. You try and take seemingly random connections and join them together. Because the more connections you make, the more successful you are. And it is a social network. That's the whole point of it. Or originally, that's what the whole point of it was.
Yeah, absolutely.
So is there scope for a paid-for service instead of all this allegedly free stuff?
Two-tier social media system. I think the problem is social media, particularly for social media influencers, is dependent on reach. If there's a financial filter, you don't have that reach. So I think there'll always be that free product. I think they might try to make more money from influencers, that you can get a paid account which allows you to circumvent or fast track a lot of the gathering followers. You could imagine that when people sign up or re-sign up for Twitter now, that there'll be a little tick box that says, oh yeah, paid for influencers get automatically, you're automatically following them. Once somebody signs up and gets a premium influencer account, they will automatically be gifted a bank of followers and you're one of them. You know, like when U2 had their album download onto iTunes and people said, oh yeah, their iTunes account was infected by malware. But yeah, there's scope for things like that to happen.
So just like any Brumpod episode that you've ever listened to, we've spent half an hour or so talking about things. We offer no answers. We never offer answers. We just offer things to think about. And ultimately, when it comes to maintaining our own networks, there is no shortcut to creating a powerful, useful network that's helpful to all parties. It takes time and it does take maintenance, like the gardening analogy. But it's something that does take nurturing. You're welcome. Something we have all then. It does take maintenance and it does take a lot of nurturing. But the results, when done properly, can certainly pay dividends. Well, we hope that has been useful to you in some minute way. And we thank you for listening. Thank you for your patience with us not being here for so long. But we are back. And we are back for good, to quote Gary Barlow. So without further ado, we bid you farewell. Thank you for listening. And we shall catch you next time.
You've been listening to Brumpod, the podcast for small businesses by small businesses. Brought to you by Brummies Networking, the home of free, stripped-back business networking. Produced by Audio Shed Podcast Studio. Follow us on Twitter, at Brumpod. You can follow and subscribe to future episodes using Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, and several other podcast platforms. Just search for Brumpod. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard, then please do consider leaving us a review. Music by Bureaucratic. We'll see you on the next episode.